It's a Research UK podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Kat Arney. In this month's show, we take a trip up the garden path as we find out about the charity's garden at this year's Chelsea Flower Show. Plus, should we be popping aspirin to prevent cancer? Coming up later, Gavin and Stacey star Joanna Page reveals her enthusiasm for Race for Life.
I took part in the Swansea Race for Life last year and, oh, it was just such an amazing event. I just found it so inspiring.
But first, here's the news with Josephine Carrido.
Thanks, Kat. There's good news this month as Cancer Research UK's statistics team have found that the number of women dying from breast cancer has fallen to less than 12,000 a year for the first time in almost four decades, despite an increasing number of cases. The new figures show that breast cancer rates have fallen by a third since their peak in 1989, and now 8 out of 10 women survive beyond 5 years, thanks to improvements in diagnosing and treating the disease. This includes better chemotherapy and radiotherapy, the use of hormone treatments such as tamoxifen and anastrozole, and the introduction of the National NHS Breast Screening Programme. Here's Senior Science Information Manager Julie Sharp explaining the significance of the news.
The incredible thing about these results is that they really show the power of research. They demonstrate how the work of Cancer Research UK is really making a difference to beating cancer. For example, our role in breast cancer drugs such as tamoxifen have really shaped the way that patients are treated today. And all of the discoveries that our scientists have made are really making a difference to people's lives.
A new report published in the journal The Lancet suggests that taking aspirin in your 40s could cut the risk of cancer developing later in life. Previous research has suggested that people who regularly take aspirin are less likely to develop bowel or breast cancer, and possibly other types of cancer as well. But taking aspirin regularly can also have side effects, such as causing stomach ulcers or bleeding. The report, authored by Cancer Research UK scientist Professor Jack Kuzik, looked at all the research that had been done into the risks and benefits of taking aspirin for cancer prevention. The conclusion was that taking the drug at a younger age, when side effects are less likely to be a problem, could have a protective effect later in life. But we still don't know enough to make strong recommendations, particularly about the best dose of aspirin for people to take. Here's Professor Kuzik explaining more about the findings.
We had a meeting in which all the world's experts were actually gathered together to discuss the role of aspirin in cancer prevention. And it was a far-ranging discussion. In the end, we decided that we couldn't make clear recommendations at this stage, but identified that the use of aspirin at an earlier age than is typically used might be really important. First of all, because it appears that you need to take aspirin for at least 10 years before you get a benefit. And secondly, the side effects of aspirin are much less in younger men and women than at older ages. And we're urging researchers to continue the follow-up of current trials and to undertake new trials to clarify the role of aspirin in cancer prevention.
Scientists from Cancer Research Technology, Cancer Research UK's drug development company, have been investigating an exciting potential drug that can slow the growth of pancreatic cancer. The chemical blocks the activity of a molecule called protein kinase D, which is involved in the development of several different types of cancer. In lab tests, the scientists found that it could slow the growth of pancreatic tumours, and it may also have an effect on lung cancers too. There's still much more work to be done before the chemical becomes a drug that can be tested in clinical trials involving patients, but the initial results are promising and bode well for the future. That's all the news for now. Back to you, Kat.
Thanks, Josephine. And you can get the latest news from our award-winning Science Update blog at scienceblog.cancerresearchuk.org. If you want to find out more about any of these stories or get the latest from the charity's scientists and researchers around the world, then have a look at our news and resources website. That's info.cancerresearchuk.org. Our network of National Cancer Research UK centres is growing, and we've just announced the launch of a new Southampton centre, hot on the heels of centres in Belfast, Liverpool and Birmingham. I spoke to Professor Peter Johnson, Cancer Research UK's Clinical Director and Professor of Clinical Oncology at the University of Southampton. I started by asking him what the new centre there is aiming to achieve.
It's really doing two things. It's building on the success and the track record in the centre, particularly in the field of cancer immunology, bringing vaccines and antibodies into the clinic. And it's also developing some new areas of research as well, primarily around cancer biology and surgery. So building on the expertise in head and neck cancer within Southampton to start to develop more understanding of the biology of that and how that can be applied in the clinic with some important developments in the area of head and neck surgery. And secondly, in the field of breast cancer, to build upon the research, particularly in cancer genetics and the cell biology of breast cancer, to link this more closely to the academic surgery department, where we see major developments in the future in academic breast cancer surgery.
Why is it important that Cancer Research UK is investing in these centres, is bringing together all this expertise in the centres across the country?
I think the Cancer Research UK centres as a whole will give us a fantastic platform to make sure that we bring the basic research and the applied research within Cancer Research UK, which is already at a very high level, towards the clinic as quickly as possible. There have been several initiatives along these lines, such as the Experimental Cancer Medicine Centres, but this is really an opportunity to build on the success of that and to expand it into perhaps some areas where there hasn't been the focus previously.
And where would you like to be with the Southampton Centre, say, in 5 years' time? What would you be hoping to make significant steps towards?
I hope we'll see an expansion of the pipeline of new immunotherapy reagents going into clinical trials and application. And furthermore, we'll see a broadening, particularly of our research in cancer surgery, in head and neck cancer and breast cancer, with new surgical techniques and an ever closer bringing together of cancer cell biology and the academic surgeons.
And how are you going to integrate what's going on at the centre with the local community and Cancer Research UK supporters in the Southampton area?
One of the really strong points about the centre's initiative is the raising of the visibility of Cancer Research UK in our centres around the country to make sure that not only do we bring the research into the clinic as effectively as possible, but we also raise the awareness of people who benefit from that on the clinical side, the people who pass through the cancer centres for their treatment, and also that we start to raise awareness among perhaps younger people, secondary schools, people around the universities about the opportunities and the fantastic progress which is being made in cancer research, and try and make sure that we use our centres as a way of bringing in the brightest and best young people into this area.
As the weather picks up, many people think about spending some time in the garden. And where better to get some inspiration for your own backyard than the Chelsea Flower Show? This year, Cancer Research UK unveils its seventh garden at the show, paid for, as always, entirely by an anonymous donor whose gift is specifically for the garden. The garden, designed by landscape architect Robert Myers, aims to celebrate the enormous impact we've had in beating cancer and raise awareness of the charity's work. I spoke to Robert to find out more about the inspiration behind the garden and what it's going to look like.
Well, the inspiration behind the garden is really the theme of impact, and that's really the theme that underlies the whole garden. So we wanted the impact to be really not a sort of aggressive impact, but a much more gentle one that sort of is pervasive through the whole garden. And so we've really picked up the idea of having this focal point towards the back of the garden, which is a large stone sculpture by Simon Thomas. That sits within an oval pool, and then these very gentle ripples just emanate out from this epicentre, if you like, across the garden in these concentric circles, which form vertical slots in the surface of the pool, like the sort of parting of the Red Sea, and they travel across the garden outwards and take on the form of narrow planted strips within the paving, and then when they cross a lawn they become stone strips, and then they go back to planting again. And that's then generated a sort of theme of sinuous curves and circles. So we have these slightly raised plant beds with this sinuous concrete edge that runs down the length of the garden, which will be a sort of informal seat. It contains the planting, and the planting is arranged in a sort of series of layers above that.
And what sort of plants are we going to have in there?
Well, we've got a sort of common theme of a canopy of multi-stemmed Rus typhina, which is the stag's horn sumac, which will give a sort of dappled shade over the whole garden and tie it all together. And then underneath that, we have really a sort of backbone of a spine of evergreen planting. Again, picking up this sort of theme of impact, theme of sinuous and bubbly planting. So it's actually going to be a sort of cloud-pruned something called Ilex crinata, which is the Japanese holly, pruned into sort of undulating domes. That forms the sort of spine of the planting. And then around that, we have other ground covers and herbaceous plants, spiky plants to give a sort of vertical counterpoint, but a little bit of colour and quite a lot of texture.
And Chelsea is midway through May. How are things going so far? When do you get started on building the garden?
Well, it's rather frightening to think that we actually start building in about 10 days' time, and they'll break ground on site, and then there's a sort of frantic 2.5 weeks of building, with the actual the Queen coming to open it, coming to the preview on Monday the 18th. So that's a deadline like no other, really.
So once the flower show is over, what's going to happen to the garden?
Well, it's always very sad, because after the show, of course, it's only been there for a week and then it all gets taken apart. But the sculpture, which is the main sort of centrepiece of the garden, is going to be auctioned after the show in aid of Cancer Research UK. So hopefully that will find a good home. And obviously as much of the plant material and paving material will be reused as we can.
And of course the Cancer Research UK gardens have a bit of a history of doing quite well in the Chelsea Flower Show. You have high hopes for your garden this year?
Well, it's so difficult to say, isn't it? But we've got a big pair of shoes to fill after Andy Sturgeon's last few gardens. But who knows? It's in the lap of the gods, I think.
Joanna Page is an actress best known for appearing as Stacey in the BBC TV comedy Gavin and Stacey. And she's also a big fan of Race for Life, our series of 5 kilometre women-only running events that raise millions of pounds every year to support the charity's work. Since the event started in 1994, 4 million women have taken part in total, raising a staggering £240 million towards our research. Here's Joanna's take on Race for Life and what it means to her.
I took part in the Swansea Race for Life last year and it was just such an amazing event. I just found it so inspiring. I took part because my mum had breast cancer and so I'd never done a 5K before and I hadn't really done much training, but you don't need to do a lot of training because you can walk, you can run, you can jog. When I turned up, there were women there and there were, you know, they were in groups, they had their friends and they were just walking round and, you know, chatting, and it was just such a fantastic opportunity for all of these women to get together and just to be inspired. And I was just jogging around, and when I started feeling really tired and like I couldn't carry on anymore and that I didn't, you know, want to do it anymore, I just looked at the back of people's t-shirts and they had things like "I'm doing this for my mum," or "I'm doing this for dad," or "I'm doing this for Sarah," and it was just so inspiring, and it just makes you want to cry, and it just makes you feel, you know, come on, you can carry on, you can do this, you can walk around, you can jog around, you can run, you can be going for a time, you can be just walking around with your mum, with your gran, with your friends, having a chat. And it just makes you feel so amazing that you are raising money for such a fantastic cause. The tips that I have got for women who are going to be doing the Race for Life this year are: drink lots of water, put a comfy pair of shoes on, and then just go with a group of girls. I mean, you can either go on your own and just, you know, try and go for a time and, you know, try and run all the way round. But, you know, a good thing is to go with a group of the girls and walk around together. You know, you can be chatting, you can be supporting each other when you're feeling a bit tired. But you know, it's not difficult because nobody's competing. Everybody's just there together and supporting each other, and you know, just go around with a group of girls, put on a pink t-shirt and have fun.
There's over 200 Race for Life events taking place across the UK this summer, and we're inviting every woman to take part, whether you want to run, walk or jog that 5 kilometres. If you'd like to find one near you, then just visit www.raceforlife.org. Well, we've reached the end once more, and I do hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast. You can keep up to date with all the latest progress in research from our science blog. That's scienceblog.cancerresearchuk.org. And please do let us know what you think of the podcast by leaving feedback on the blog or just email your comments to podcast@cancer.org.uk. I'll be back next month with all the latest news from Cancer Research UK. So until then, goodbye.